There are 7,000 times as many inhabited worlds in the super universes as there are in Havona. And this completely ignores uninhabited spheres, suns, dark islands, architectural spheres. Gee whiz. Just for example, the number is worked out in here. All the projected local universes and their component parts were established, there would be slightly less than 500 billion architectural worlds in the 7 super universes. There are 500 times as many architectural worlds in the super universes as there are in Havona. I'm referring to Jerusalem's, Edentia's, Salvington's, Universes. 500 billion architectural worlds, just slightly less. Listen, in case you think these inhabited worlds are any criteria of how many space bodies there are, at the end of the paper on the 7 super universes on page 182, they make this statement. The grand universe number of your world, Urantia, is 5,342,482,337,666.
In what aggregation?
Is the registry number on Uversa and on Paradise. Your number in the catalog of inhabited worlds, and I suspect they're registered in frequency. Just as they are in Satania. We are 606 of the system of Satania, which means 605 worlds developed human life before us. And we were the 606th on which human beings evolved. That determined our number. Now that's a big number, isn't it? But listen to the next statement. I know the physical sphere registry number. In other words, they've got all physical space bodies registered, inhabited or uninhabited. But it is of such an extraordinary size that it is of little practical significance to the mortal mind. It's an altogether bigger number. So when I say that, when I reason here that the 7 super universes based on inhabited worlds are 7,000 times as big as Havona, that is a major understatement. They're altogether much bigger, aren't they? Jupiter doesn't take up much more room in the solar system than Urantia, and Jupiter's a heck of a lot bigger than our world. And these worlds aren't moving at random. They're moving in a linear procession in 7 circuits. It takes more room out here for the helter-skelter motions of Orvandon as compared with the regular, orderly motions in Havona. I have the belief that the central creation figures in at probably 0.01% of the total volume of the grand universe. Or the relationship of 1 penny to $100. I think such a small percentage of such a large volume can be cheerfully ignored. I think the hole in the donut is so small that we can say, we can calculate without worrying about it. So, I'm going to assume that the diameter of the whole grand universe is twice the transverse diameter of Orvandon, which means I'm thinking of 2 inches.
Not
just the transverse diameter of one segment of the dome.
Yeah.
Because as we are, we'll quickly see, we're going to be dealing with numbers that are tremendously larger. Well, what's the relationship with a good emblem for the Urantia book, the Urantia Brotherhood? It's different. And if you want to get geometric, it's one of the best ways I know of describing the Trinity, or picturing it. The papers speak of the person of the Son enveloping the person of the Father, and both being enshrouded by the infinite Spirit, and that's three concentric circles. Mm-hmm. The emblem of the Trinity. There is a... Are you with me? How far do you take them? We put the blue circles twice in the Urantia book, on the two fly sheets. We put them on our letterheads. I think I like that. In my own firm, I put a crest on our letterhead. I mean, we got a coat of arms, you know, with a little motto which says, Scientia Vincit, science victorious. In other words, it's better than guessing. And I think it's nice to do that. Now, how far do you want to go? It's a difference in degree. The Oklahoma group equipped me with cufflinks, tie clasp, and a button pin, you know. I felt like a Christmas tree. That goes a little far. The difference between the first and second universe age, in this sense, the first universe age is the Son in partnership with the Father. They did the planning. If you go back to the zero age, there was no conjoint creator, any more than there was a Havona. Of course, this is a misnomer. But conceptually, Havona was planned with the Father and the Son. The Infinite Spirit didn't plan Havona. The Infinite Spirit came into being by executing the act which was planned by the Father and the Son. Now, in the second universe age, now, the relationship is between the Son and the Spirit. Do we have the Universal Father on Salvington? No. We have a Son and his Spirit associated. The Spirit, in this age, sustains the relationship to the Son, which in the previous age, the Son sustained to the Father. Do you get that picture? Here's another parallel. How did the Infinite Spirit achieve personality? By the act of the creation of Havona. Prior to Havona, the Son was a person. But prior to Havona, there was no third person of deity, was there? I always cringe when I say that, because there never was such a time. Let's consider the zero point, not age, but the zero point in terms of the local universe of Nebadon. What do we have? Well, we have Michael. And Michael is very much personality, isn't he? Michael had a long universe career before he ever came out here. We don't know much about what these creator sons do. But we know that they work on the fourth circuit of Havona. Let's get some references here. Yes, page 293. Fourth circuit of Havona is sometimes called the circuit of the suns. There are seven worlds in this circuit on which the reserve corps of the Paradise Michaels maintain special service schools of mutual ministry to both ascending and descending pilgrims. Remember, the descenders are Paradise citizens. And it is on these worlds of the Michael suns that the pilgrims of time and the pilgrims of eternity arrive at their first truly mutual understanding of one another. No, there's...
Where Grand Fonda met the first one, wasn't it?
What's that? Grand Fonda was the first one, right.
Well, and he met the first descent in Pilgrim, huh?
Yes. Yeah, Preacher turning past, page 250. They're talking about creature trinitized sons of mixed parentage who aren't even allowed to function in the present universe age. They're pulled into Vice Gerrington. These unique sons of the children of time and the citizens of eternity are held in reserve on Vice Gerrington, where they are engaged in the study of the concepts of time and the realities of eternity in a special sector of the sphere occupied by the secret colleges of the core of the Creator Sons. They're just two casual references to what Mike Hills are up to before they ever come out here. Now, let's see what Mike Hills' creative consort was like. Page 203. Mike Hill's creative consort came into existence concurrently with the appearance of Mike Hill of Nebada, or of that Mike Hill who was to be Mike Hill of Nebada. You ever stop and think we don't really know his name, do we? Mike Hill is the name of an order. What do you suppose they called him before they could call him of Nebada? That seems to be a technique which is followed. The Adam who came to our world was not called Adam on Jerusalem. But when he came, the original Adam of Jerusalem is an unborn being. The original Adam and Eve of Jerusalem are the personal beings created by Michael. All of the other material sons are their children, or direct or indirect. But when our Adam and Eve came here, they forsook their personal names, and they took the name of their order, Adam of Urantia. I wonder what his name was on Jerusalem.
We'll find out.
Probably, yes.
Do you think that's usual?
That Michael must have had a personal name. There's almost a million creator sons, and you got to keep them straight. But when
he had a personal number.
Set a number. I'm sure he had a name. On the universe records, we do not receive a name until we fuse with our thought adjusters. Nevertheless, I'm sure we will be referred to by name. Andon and Fanta received those names somewhere on the mansion worlds when they fused with their adjusters, but they had names in this life, Santa Ann and Santa N. Well, at any rate, Michael's a person. But this creative consort of his is not a personality. She is a second stage creative spirit. And in the beginning, when the Father and the Son jointly conceive an identical idea, and that's the basis for Trinitization too, incidentally, a Michael Creator appears. And the Infinite Spirit, this act repercusses in the Infinite Spirit, because it is the nature of the Infinite Spirit to respond to any joint Father-Son plan. That is her nature. And something differentiates within the Infinite Spirit, and I would call it the capacity to cooperate with this Creator Son. And that's step one in the initial differentiation of a creative spirit. A creative spirit, I don't care how long, how old she is, can't progress beyond the second stage, can she? Because if you'll flip the page, you'll see that the third stage can't be reached until she comes out here in time and space and begins to work, not as the mother of Seraphim, but as a super power center. So, we've got an interesting parallel now. As you go down the six known stages of the evolution of a creative spirit, you discover she is becoming increasingly personal. She is becoming less and less of a focus of the Infinite Spirit and more a divine personality in her own name and right. And how does she do this? She does this by collaboration with the Creator Son in the perfecting of a local universe. And this is an exact parallel of how the Infinite Spirit came into being, except the Infinite Spirit flashed into being in eternity. You can't see it happen. But this is happening in time, and so it can be observed. A creative spirit becomes real as a personal being exactly as the Infinite Spirit became real as a personal deity through the completion of a creative act. Isn't that fascinating? The papers never quite say that she's personal. They tell us that Michael has always regarded her as a personality. They say that when she reaches the fourth stage of being, personal qualities are tremendously heightened. The creative spirit of our local universe is now in the fifth stage of being, because our local universe has entered upon its post-bestowal ages. When Nebadon is settled in light and life, she will be a sixth stage creative spirit. And then there's number seven, unrevealed. I can see a parallel too. Finaliters are sixth stage spirits. And the implication is, we'll be seventh someday. My guess is, we will become seventh stage spirits either at the end of the present universe age or at the beginning of the next universe age. What that means, I don't know. But we're unfinished beings. And of course, I think when we become finished beings, in one sense, we will merely discover that we are kindergartners in a higher sense. When a planet is settled in light and life, we've made it, see? But then you discover there are stages of light and life, and you go right on progressing into the different epochs of light and life. The Son and Spirit are collaborating in the present universe age, and this collaboration is not so much a paradise collaboration as it is a time-space collaboration. The union of the Son and the Spirit is out here in the local universes, which are the evolutionary cauldrons. This is where it's really happening. Here, even the local universe rulers evolve. And let's consider the nature of the diverse evolution of a Creator Son and a creative spirit. I think of the two courses of evolution as operating at right angles to each other. A paradise creator son has no evolution of personality, does he? He is a person from the very beginning. His evolution is descending from God to man, touching various stages, so that his composite nature, when completed as a master son, involves an intimate experiential knowledge of everything that is knowable from the Universal Father to the life of a carpenter here on earth. He's got it in principle. He doesn't have to touch every level. This is not necessary. But he has covered all these levels in principle. No one can ever say to the sovereign of Nebadon concerning income taxes or family budgets, "Bush you there, Charlie." You know? He's worked his way down. That's kind of an odd concept to us, isn't it? We have to work our way up. But this is true throughout the universe. Here, on a local universe, Mother Spirit creates angels. There's seven levels of revealed angels as we know them, from Supreme Seraphim all the way down the line. And these angels, some of them that are born as Supreme Seraphim, they have to work their way down to achieve these lower levels of function, just as those that are born on the lower levels have to work their way up. This is a little hard for us to understand because we are low men on the totem pole. And we start out as zygotes, you know, fertilized eggs. And from there on, it's all growth. Michael's evolution is of a descending order, right? This creative spirit has an experiential growth that is at right angles to Michael's.